This is Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith.
2 weeks ago on Radio EcoShock, we heard from Australia and the distant past. Last week, a top British scientist warned us of super dangerous climate change. Now we head for the restless west coast of North America. In Canada, trillion-dollar corporations and countries are desperately searching for a way to ship dirty tar sands crude after the Obama administration said no to the Keystone XL pipeline. These folks want to build a new pipeline across the Rocky Mountains, across countless rivers and wilderness, across native lands. And two Texan billionaires are plotting to turn the once-green city of Vancouver into a major oil shipping port for the tar sands. They want to make more billions polluting the atmosphere and changing the climate forever. You will hear three speakers in a packed public meeting promise neither plot will succeed. Then we'll head to the streets of San Francisco with As It Happens audio during the Occupy Wall Street West protests. Our Bay Area correspondent Karen Nyhus interviews environmentalist Ananda Tan as he waits with locked arms to be arrested. Then the risky radio the mainstream won't dare, You Are There, as the crowd microphone chants the words of Ted Nace on the courthouse steps demanding justice. That's in our second half hour. From tanker mania to Wall Street greed, I'm Alex Smith, and this is Radio EcoShock. On Sunday, January 22nd, I recorded Oil-Free Coast, Tankers and Pipelines at the Roundhouse Community Center in downtown Vancouver, Canada. The event began with the voice of an amazing 10-year-old singer and songwriter, Little Takaya Blaney, the First Nations wonder. I'll play you a minute of her anti-tanker song, Shallow Water, and then we'll go to our speakers, Art Sterrett, Rex Weiler, and Nathan Cullen. Here is Takaya. Listen to the whole song. Find the links to the YouTube video of Shallow Waters at the Takaya Blaney website in my Radio EcoShock blog at ecoshock.info. She belted it out live and will do the same at the Rio 2012 conference. Let's start with the Northern Pipeline, proposed by the Enbridge Corporation, crossing thousands of miles of mountains and wilderness, reaching from the climate-killing tar sands to the delicate fjords of Canada's west coast. Our host is Linda Kemp, a sustainable living expert from Langara College.
The first speaker today is Art Sterrett. Art Sterrett is the executive director of Coastal First Nations, and he's coming forward. And Coastal First Nations is an alliance of 10 First Nations with traditional territories extending from the river's inlet. And he did some coaching earlier on pronunciation, because some of the words are not familiar to an English speaker. So you can correct me if I don't get these correct. The traditional territories are the Wakunuk through Bella Bella, the Heltsuk, Bella Kula, which is the Nuxalk. Klemtu is two peoples, the Kitisu and the Hi-Hi. Hartley Bay, which is the Gitgat. Kitimat Village, the Haisla. And up to Prince Rupert area, which is the Metla, Katla, Lakwa, Alams. The First Nations communities of Haida Gwaii from Skitgate and Old Matsit are also members. All of these nations are strongly opposed to the proposed Enbridge pipeline through Bruderheim, Alberta, to Kitimat, BC, and the associated plans to have very large oil tankers loading heavy crude oil at Kitimat for shipment by ocean to Asia. The Haisla Nation and the Gitgat Nation are at ground zero on this issue, since the new supertanker port is proposed for Kitimat at the head of the Douglas Channel, which is a narrow ford leading from Kitimat to Hecate Strait and Hartley Bay along the channel. All the members of the Coastal First Nations are making presentations to the Joint Review Panel on Northern Gateway, and Canada's First Nation and Coastal First Nations has presented substantial factual information and will make oral presentations and examinations in the fall. So I'd like to introduce and welcome Art Stirrett.
Waisam,
Simgiget,
Sigidam Hananak, Lagigiget, Adagabawalsik, Chief Women, Squamish, Haida, Gitsan, Musqueam, Tsiawutu. It is indeed an honor to be on Coast Salish territory, and it really is an honor to follow Takaya. As tough as it is, she always has a way of grounding us. I do this because of my grandchildren, which is, I think, why all of you are here. I have 16 grandchildren that live within the Great Bear Rainforest. And so every time I see Takaya, it kind of reminds me why I'm here and why we do the things that we do. I had a speech written. Somebody even helped me do it, but I threw it away after I heard the opening. So I'm going to wing it a little bit and just hope that I can control myself. Over the last while, the Coastal First Nations have investigated the impacts of oil in areas throughout the world. We've been into Alaska. We've been into the Gulf of Mexico. We've checked out what happened with the Kalamazoo. And we've studied what's happened in Australia with ships going ashore and everything else. In the meantime, we've had the Queen of the North crash in the rocks right outside of Hartley Bay, right on Douglas Channel, where you're expecting to see huge crude carriers taking crude oil to ports around the world. And the one thing that our people have found is that this oil has a culture of its own. And as we investigated in places like Louisiana with the head of the Louisiana Shrimp Association and the home of First Nations people, their advice to us is to be very, very careful about how you allow oil into your territories, because oil is a culture that has no conscience. And it will gobble up your culture. When I look out here today, I see a culture in British Columbia that has not been around for that long, about 150 years. We have all been blending our cultures, First Nations culture, with wherever you come from, whether you be Chinese, East Indian, Korean, Vietnamese, English, Filipino. All of that has created the culture that we have in British Columbia. That culture is really what makes us unique on this side of the Rockies. British Columbia is a living, breathing organism. As First Nations, we're told that every day. This organism called British Columbia, west of the Rockies, doesn't have a lot to do with the rest of Canada. We're related. We honor one another. We have family that extends right to the east coast of Canada. But the reality is, the waters that flow out of the Rockies flow to the Pacific. They don't flow into Alberta. They don't flow into Saskatchewan. They come to us. We have a couple of rivers, the two most significant rivers in North America. The largest run of salmon in the world goes up the Fraser River. The second largest run of salmon in the world goes up the Skeena. We have a pipeline that is proposed to cut across the headwaters of these two lifelines that we have. This living, breathing organism called British Columbia has a couple of major arteries that run through it. And they feed us sustenance. If you think about the blood that runs through your body and all of the energy that you get if you have a chocolate bar or you eat and it gives you energy to move on. For First Nations people, the energy that comes from that major artery is fish. And it waters our crops in the Fraser Valley. It's a place where our animals, our moose and our deer and everything else go to nourish themselves. It nourishes our trees. It's the lifeblood of all of us. We get out into the ocean. It nourishes halibut and cod and crabs, everything, sea urchins, sea cucumber. And this is where Coastal First Nations comes in. Over the last decade, the Coastal First Nations have come together not just amongst ourselves, which is tough enough with a group that has four different languages, but we've come together with industry, we've come together with municipal leaders, we've come together with the environmental community, we've come together with unions, and we've come up with a plan. And that plan is known as the Great Bear Rainforest. I was looking at an article in the National Geographic, and the Great Bear Rainforest is called in there the wildest place in North America. But we don't see it as wild. We don't even see it as the Great Bear Rainforest. It's like one of the previous speakers said, it's just home. But it's a place that we've been able to come together and build a culture that's different than it's ever been before. First Nations people are still here because we adapt. And we welcome other cultures to come amongst us. We welcome you to share the resources that we have. But we can't allow other cultures to come in and try and destroy everything that we have. So over the last while, we have done everything that we can to try and save the culture that we've created on the coast. And I look out here today and I see a whole new culture flourishing in British Columbia. I see something that is going to push back that evil culture that is trying to consume all of us. I'm not kidding myself and nor are any of the Coastal First Nations. We all have a dependency on oil. We just don't need it to consume us. We don't need it to destroy everything that we've got, including our culture. So this is a pretty scary fight that we're involved in. I look at Takai and I'm always reminded of a question that was asked of me by a 9-year-old grandson, Brendan. Brendan says, "Papa, can you stop the oil tankers from killing the whales? Can you stop them from destroying the fish?" And I said, "You bet we can, Brendan. We can because we've got friends in British Columbia that are going to help us to do that. We have a culture out here that is not going to allow that to happen. And we will. But we need all of you. We need all of your friends. We need all of your neighbors, your families. You need to phone your MLA. You need to phone your MP. I've got mine with me today. He's sitting on the floor over here. You're the new radicals in this province, I understand, from the... So let's show them what radicals are made of in British Columbia. It's just all of us. It's a new culture. It's a culture that's only been born for about 150 years, but I love it. I love to see the faces, and I love to see the values that we've got here. If we do this together, we can all preserve this unique culture that we in BC have created. We are different, each and every one of us. Let's celebrate that. Let's do it for our children. Let's do it for our future generations. My last comment is, let's not forget our well-being as humans. And the ecological health of this province are inseparable. They're compatible. And they're mutually dependent on one another. I think all of you that are here today know that. Let's spread the word. Let's spread the radical idea. We depend on one another and we depend on our environment. Thank you.
That was First Nations leader Art Sterritt, recorded January 22nd in Vancouver, Canada. This is Radio EcoShock the Restless West Coast Edition. You are listening to three speakers at a packed public rally to stop pipelines and tankers from wrecking the pristine wilderness of British Columbia and the beautiful city of Vancouver with its beaches and its lovely shorelines.
And our next speaker is Rex Weiler. And Rex, many of you will know that Rex is a co-founder of Greenpeace and is currently working with Tanker Free BC to protect our coast. Tanker Free BC is a broad coalition of citizens, fishers, commercial boat operators, and concerned environmental groups seeking a legal ban on crude oil traffic along BC's coast, including Burrard Inlet. Such a ban would honor coastal First Nations' stated wishes, safeguard the fishing industry, defend our fragile marine ecosystems from a devastating oil spill, and protect our coastal communities and economies. Rex is a writer, journalist, ecologist, and historian, and is the author of 9 books, including a history of Greenpeace called Greenpeace: The Inside Story, as well as books on whales, ecology, and social issues such as Song of the Whale, Chop Wood, Carry Water, Finding Spiritual Fulfillment in Everyday Life, Blood of the Land, Save a Whale, and I Took a Walk Today. So, Rex, welcome.
Thank you so much. Thank all of you for being here today. Your presence here helps us all. It certainly warms my heart to see this many people willing to come out and help support this issue in Vancouver. And Art, thank you for your words, and Nathan, for being here and supporting this issue. The reason that I am here is because a few years ago, we began to notice oil tankers actually coming through the port of Vancouver, Burrard Inlet. Friends of mine and I began to notice that tankers were coming right through Burrard Inlet to Westridge Terminal, and these were larger tankers than we had ever seen in the Vancouver Harbor. We were aware of the proposed Enbridge pipeline. We were also aware that there is a Trans Mountain pipeline that does come over to Vancouver from Alberta. This was part of the BC Gas pipeline network. It used to deliver petroleum to the refineries in British Columbia, where we would refine products. And then we would sometimes ship, and we still do ship refined oil products north and south along the coast to communities along the coast. There's a big difference between shipping refined oil products and crude oil tankers. And the main difference is any oil spill in the water is not good. And even if you have a small boat and you spill oil in the water, this is not good for the marine environment. Our group that's working now today is working on to stop the shipment of tar sands crude oil in major tankers anywhere in British Columbia, and that includes Burrard Inlet, where we are here. Let me give you a little history of what happened. In 2005, our BC Gas Corporation was sold to a couple of Texas oil billionaires, ex-Enron billionaires, Kinder and Morgan. Now, Richard Kinder is the former lead lawyer, lead counsel, chief counsel for the Enron Corporation. Some of you may know about the Enron Corporation. They ripped off their own shareholders. They set up these phony little front companies, and they would dump toxic assets into these companies and sell shares to shareholders, and then the companies would go bankrupt. This was just a giant ripoff scam. And when Richard Kinder left this company, Enron, he received a $31 million bonus when he left the company. He's worth about $3 billion today. And he and his partner, Bill Morgan, bought BC Gas. That was formerly your public asset, sold to these two Texas billionaires. By your government, who we used to presume was elected for our benefit to look after our interests, and we find our own governments, federal and provincial, now looking after the interests of the oil companies and the billionaires. Now, when they bought BC Gas, they flipped the company and they kept the pipelines. That's what they wanted. They wanted the pipelines. And then in 2007, Kinder Morgan and China began to, as they said, as this was announced in Stats Canada, It was not announced publicly. Our own public officials in British Columbia appear to not have known about it. The public certainly didn't know about it. There was no public consultation. There was no consultation with the First Nations here, with the Tsleil-Waututh, the Squamish, or the Musqueam in British Columbia. And Kinder Morgan and China entered into an agreement to start shipping tar sands crude oil through Vancouver to Westridge Terminal in Burnaby. So these giant tankers come under the First Narrows, through the Vancouver Harbor, under Second Narrows Bridge to Westridge Terminal. They sit off Cates Park, and we have Ben West at the Wilderness Committee now has a program. You can check it out on the Wilderness Committee. You can actually sign up and get a notice each time one of these tankers comes into Vancouver. And it's about one or two a week. Now, there are three major pipeline routes out of the tar sands. The Keystone Pipeline in the United States, which you now know about because our friends in the United States have rallied to stop that pipeline, and they've been partially successful. That fight is, of course, not over yet. There's the Enbridge Pipeline that we're addressing today to northern British Columbia, to Kitimat, the proposal. And there is the Kinder Morgan Trans Mountain Pipeline, currently in operation as we speak, shipping tar sands crude oil to Vancouver and loading it on tankers. Now, each of these pipelines is expected. The intention is to increase the shipments through these pipelines up to 500,000 to 700,000 barrels a day. That would be one tanker per day. If Kinder Morgan gets their wish to expand their pipeline to 500,000 to 700,000 barrels per day, you are talking about one major oil tanker in and out of the harbor of Vancouver every day carrying tar sands crude oil. They're trying to turn Vancouver into the tar sands shipping port. And that's why we've stepped up and said, no, that's not going to happen. Now, there is a misconception that this is a done deal, that the shipments of oil into Vancouver is a done deal. And the reason there's that misconception is the company has set out to make sure there is that misconception, because they have said over and over again in the media, whenever they're confronted on this issue, they say, oh, we've been shipping oil through that pipeline for a long time, and we've been shipping oil on the coast of BC for a long time. This is nothing new. This is a lie. This is new. This is tar sands crude oil from the tar sands in Alberta. This is not refined oil products that we used to ship to Squamish or Bella Bella or all the communities along the coast. This is an entirely new industry, which is an industry to ship Canada's tar sands crude oil to China and to elsewhere around the world. They have done this without consulting the people of British Columbia. They've done this without consulting the First Nations of this region. And in many cases, in most cases, they did this without even consulting our elected officials. So this is cultural decision-making by foreign corporations. A couple of rich billionaire oil men in Houston, Texas, are deciding how and when and where we ship crude oil along our coast. And I know with the support of the Coastal First Nations and Art and Nathan Culley and the Wilderness Committee and West Coast Environmental Law and Forest Ethics and Tanker Free BC and all the groups that are rising up to battle this, this will not happen. We will not let it happen.
Rex Weiler is a co-founder and historian of Greenpeace. He is now working with the group Tanker Free BC to stop the threat of mega tankers to the West Coast, the fragile Georgia Strait, and the Port of Vancouver. Find out more at tankerfreebc.org.
Radio EcoShock.
Now the politics of promoting tar sands oil and the voices for sanity. Canadian Prime Minister Stephen Harper just claimed all Canadians who oppose the tar sands are just puppets for the big American foundations. He questions the national loyalty of any critics and threatens the environmental review required by law. Our next speaker is from the leading opposition party, the New Democratic Party, or the NDP.
Our third speaker is Nathan Cullen, and I'll just do a brief introduction because I think Nathan wants to introduce himself, but I think there's a few things you need to know about Nathan. First, he is the MP for Skeena-Bulkley Valley, the riding for much of the proposed Enbridge pipeline route. And he's the former NDP Environment and Natural Resources critic and has worked on environmental issues for over 20 years. And Nathan is also one of the candidates for the NDP leadership and lives in Smithers with his wife, Diana, and twin sons, Isaac and Elliot. I just want to also say that one of the successes that Nathan has had is in December 2010, he led an opposition motion calling for a ban of bulk oil tankers off the north coast of British Columbia, which passed the House of Commons on December 7th, 2010 by a vote of 143-138. This is the first time the Parliament of Canada voiced its support for a North Coast tanker ban. So I'd like to welcome Nathan.
Thank you very much. What a good-looking room of people you are this afternoon. I want to recognize being on Coast Salish territory, and thank you for that lovely introduction and prayer. You know, when you book a room this big, you come into it empty to decide whether this is a good space or not. And I've got to tell you, when you're booking public events, you worry a little. You worry as to whether anyone's going to show up or not. Because even if we put 100 people in here, it'd feel a little empty. And seeing you all fill up this room today reminds me of a couple of things that are most powerful in my world. And it is not the world occupied by folks like Mr. Harper. And the world is this, is that people matter. When people come together and express common values and hopes, you matter. And we have a system right now that is not serving you. The politics in this country, the politics of this pipeline, the politics of oil are broken, badly broken. And we know this because we have a prime minister in Ottawa right now who got less than 24% of the vote of those eligible to cast a vote in this country, and with the slimmest of majorities has decided that that is a mandate to do whatever he wants, that is a mandate to say that anybody who raises an opinion, perhaps an objection, is labeled what? A radical. Anybody in this room a radical? Yeah, that's what I thought, you bunch of radicals, because you believe in this idea. You believe in this idea of democracy, whereas if you have an opinion, you are entitled to express it. That if you have a view about your world and a hope for your future, you are entitled to express it. And I don't know the world that the Prime Minister occupies, but in my world, when people express their opinion, that's called democracy, and I honor that voice. Our voices will not be silenced on this. I would offer you also this. There's a certain pathology within the government. I use the word very explicitly because I see it not just when they're dealing with this particular question. I see it when they introduce the crime bill that will criminalize an entire generation of Canadians. I see it when they want to buy fighter jets that don't work in Canada, and for the price of just three of them, we could lift every senior out of poverty in this country. I see it when this government comes to British Columbia and say, we're not going to listen to your voices. We're not going to respect First Nations rights and title. We are going to work on behalf of some of our friends. And I think it would be the honorable thing to do for this prime minister to register himself as a lobby for the oil industry, because that's what he does. Of course, I'm in politics, right? The four-letter word. There are some things that are absolutely right-wing and left-wing issues, but there are some things that are right and wrong. And for a company to come and propose shipping raw bitumen 1,100 kilometers over hundreds of rivers and streams that we rely on, to then put it into super tankers bigger than the Empire State Building, try to navigate down the channels of our north coast, making three 90-degree hairpin turns, and over the 50 years of this pipeline, do that 15,000 times consecutively without ever making a mistake. Without some captain getting drunk or trying to show off or some part breaking. And what they say is we have technology. There's no accounting for human stupidity. There is no technology we've yet invented that will make up for someone doing something stupid. And I'm sure that ship out in Italy there with 4,000 tourists on board was equipped with all the latest technology, had all the best radars and binging machines and things to protect it from running into an island and yet it did. The Queen of the North, which sank virtually on the very route that Enbridge is proposing, had lots of technology on board, and yet it managed to hit Gill Island and kill two people in the process. But know this, is where a mistake has been made. There is a gift in what we're looking at here today. A gift that in the politics where I come from in northern BC, we see too often. And that's when we are presented with a clear and present danger, a clear and present threat to our culture, to our economy, and to our values. Because when we're presented with that threat, it brings together unlikely allies. A tall tan elder, a friend of mine, we stood on the blockade when we were keeping Shell out of the sacred headwaters because they wanted to frack for gas at the headwaters of the Stikine and Nass rivers. You want to talk about environmental suicide. These guys thought it was a good idea to frack, and they still do, by the way, frack for gas at the headwaters of those rivers. And he said, well, Nathan, what we've got ourselves here is a cowboys and Indians strategy. I said, what do you mean? He said, well, we can bring people into the room that can't even agree on what day of the week it is. Farmers and ranchers and First Nations and environmentalists and their Birkenstocks and business guys and all sorts of people who all of a sudden come together. And they come together around a common value, protecting our environment, protecting our way of life, and even more importantly, protecting something that's sacred, which is our voice, which is our power in this conversation. And there isn't an oil company, and there isn't a prime minister that can take that voice away from you. And they won't do it this time.
That was Nathan Cullen, a member of parliament in the northern area threatened by the proposed Enbridge tar sands pipeline going to the west coast. The dirty crude would be loaded in supertankers going down narrow fjords and into some of the most storm-tossed waters in the world. What could go wrong? Stay tuned for our On the Streets Radical Radio from San Francisco, the Wall Street protest there.
Check out the Radio EcoShock website. We're at ecoshock.org.
Welcome back to the Radio EcoShock Restless West Coast Edition. Now we're going to break the rules of radio. When people take to the streets in protest, your mainstream media gives you a glimpse, with maybe a chant in the background, while a reporter in a suit or dress tells you what it all means. Not here. We're going to start with an interview of environmentalist Ananda Tan as he sits with his arms locked with other protesters waiting for arrest outside the Bank of America in San Francisco. Risking her own person and equipment is Radio EcoShock Bay Area correspondent Karen Nyus.
Radio EcoShock, we're here with Ananda Tan, and tell us which organization you're from.
I'm with the Global Alliance for Incinerator Alternatives. I'm also with Rising Tide North America and the Mobilization for Climate Justice.
So I noticed that you're in lockdown here with your arms in
we
tubes.
Are.
And the tubes say no foreclosures, banks, and we're in front. Where are we?
So we are right now in front of Bank of America's Western Headquarters here in San Francisco Financial District.
I have to be here for half an hour. I got a parade to leave.
Well, thank you. Welcome, welcome. Ananda.
Robin.
Good to meet you, Robin. Thanks. So we're here in San Francisco Financial District in front of Bank of America's Western Headquarters. Bank of America and Wall Street, as most people know, are behind the financial crisis where they were bailed out by our federal government while communities got sold out, and now are in the process of foreclosing and evicting hundreds of thousands of families around the country. So we're here in solidarity with all those families and communities who are being foreclosed, who are being evicted, while Bank of America continues to take taxpayer dollars and public subsidies and finance a range of dirty corporations from the military industry to the financial markets that have driven our economy into the ground, to large polluters like big oil, coal companies, incinerators, landfill operators, the range of people who are polluting our communities, the most economically marginalized communities, where people are not only being foreclosed and evicted from their homes, but are also being subjected to a range of toxic pollution, to greenhouse gas emissions, to mercury, to dioxins and furans, to poisons that are going to make the world a very difficult place to live for our children. And Bank of America and Wall Street banks are some of the major drivers behind the development of those industries that are not only bankrupting our communities, but also polluting our communities. And so I'm here in solidarity with all those communities, standing up to the corporations that are currently ruling this
global
country.
Global citizens for some sit-ins again.
That was a bit of a rant.
Global citizens for some sit-ins. What it is, the game has been rigged to enrich corporate business interests that sent this economy spinning. Charlie Sheen is not the only clueless dude that thinks he's winning. See the 1% done spent all the rent. See the 1% done spent all the rent. Now the rent's due. So we're coming to a tent near you. We're the like-minded 99%. Standing up to corruption with loving dissent. We're the like-minded 99% standing up to corruption with loving dissent. We stand for justice and the future and all of humanity, embracing all people. Yes, even Sean Hannity. It's time to rock the nation, rock this occupation. It's time for the people to peacefully fight back. Tell Congress and the media we're taking the mic back. Tell the jaded it's that long-awaited revolution. Put away the pepper spray and reread the Constitution. These cops are paid to go crazy, yo. But we're peaceful. Don't tase me, bro. We came to incite, unite and discuss this. We came to hang and to bang the drums of justice. Let's occupy with our love and our light. Let's occupy the earth and the sky and live with all beings as a planet-wide tribe. Occupy the divine mind residing inside. See, I'm the typewriter that's known to light fires and prone to inspire the moment's own higher desire. Cause history knows it's the time for resisting the team at the scene of the crime. Tell your friends I'll meet them there at Freedom Square. They can't stop us from Seattle to Chiapas. It's our mission to envision what comes after the catastrophe. How do we move past the capitalist disaster? Our communities need us. We are all leaders. How could we ask for anything less than the future?
Just a question to you. Are you connected with this Vancouver show? Is this with Co-op Radio, did you say?
Called Radio Eco Shop.
Radio Eco Shop.
It was founded about 5 years ago.
Oh, okay.
Wow. And it
was founded around
climate. Oh, excellent. Just really great stuff. EcoShock.org.
Excellent. We're about to start a rising tide chapter in Vancouver. It's so interesting.
He goes by the name Alex Smith, but it's not his name.
Alex Smith?
Yeah.
Okay.
You can look at EcoShock.org.
EcoShock.org. Yeah. Okay. I'll have to look it up.
Okay. So what's great is like hearing from you about the climate connection, but I wonder if you also want to talk about why climate is like not being discussed in the elections, why it's sort of off the agenda, what is going on, I'm just giving you a bunch of things you might want to talk about, and like, the Keystone decision, and what.
Right. Right. Okay. Absolutely. Sure. Do you want to do it in a little bit, or do you want to do it now, or are you again?
Sure. I was just going to say if something's going down, I can't see it.
Oh, okay.
Just, like, say something.
Flag it for you. Okay. Yes. Yes. Absolutely. No. It seems pretty chill right now. So anyway, to the Occupy movement and the movement demanding climate justice around the world are very much aligned in their aspirations. And their aspirations for justice and their aspirations for the 99%. And their aspirations to stand up both the polluters and their financiers that are running the world into the ground and ruining the future of all their children. This economic crisis that this country and the world is in right now is largely driven by banks, the Wall Street banks and Bank of America, and international financial firms and venture capital firms, but also by big polluters who they work alongside, the big oil companies, the coal companies, the incinerator companies, the waste companies.
Tell us about the incinerator companies, because I think people know a lot about, they know more about the big oil, but they might not know as much about the waste, the other side.
Right. Well, there's people who are generally my age and a bit older remember a day when communities all across this country rose up against the burning of waste in massive combustion facilities called incinerators, where they burn society's discards from food scraps to construction and demolition debris, to paper, to all sorts of materials that can be easily recycled and composted, materials that we need to sustain our future. So proving for a hugely wasteful society. It's a key part of the larger climate crisis and ecological crisis we're facing today because, as some folks know, the U.S. not only consumes a third of the world's natural resources industrially every year, that generates about 30% of the world's waste every year, and that generates about 22% of the world's greenhouse gas emissions.
Does that mean we're number one?
Pardon me?
Does that mean we're number one?
When it comes to destroying the Earth, yes, we are number one. And destroying our children's future, yes, unfortunately. And that's what we're up against. And looking very closely at the supply chains that drive that disaster brings us right back to these banks. These banks that make money. Some people have called it disaster capitalism, but make money off this ecological crisis, not by steering us in a way that is sustainable for society and safe and healthy for our communities, but in a direction that provides a whole host of false solutions like clean coal and safe nuclear and burning waste for energy. Hundreds of communities around this country are currently being cited for these waste-to-energy incinerators, and these are predominantly economically marginalized people of color communities that are subjected to facilities that are leading producers of toxic pollution, of greenhouse gas emissions like carbon dioxide, toxins like mercury and dioxins, as well as a host of other co-pollutants that affect, drive up illness and respiratory disease in these poor communities.
Okay, so I get it that the incinerators are creating the waste. How are they making money?
So they make money off public subsidies, and this is where it comes back to us ending the subsidies both to Wall Street, the banks, but also the biggest corporations, the dirtiest corporations in this country. Both our federal government, our state governments, and also unbeknownst to a lot of people, our local governments are providing huge taxpayer subsidies to these companies.
So we're paying to be polluted.
We're paying to be polluted. Our tax money, our ratepayer money, our utility bills are paying for these big polluting, destructive corporations to dump toxins in our backyard and pollute our kids. And some of the most economically marginalized communities, these same communities which have the largest number of home foreclosures and evictions, face the largest number of amount of pollution that's being subsidized by their local governments. Local through investment tax credits, production tax credits, all sorts of tax breaks and write-offs, but also direct subsidies like grants in the name of renewable energy and sustainability.
So that's very interesting because a lot of times I think we do these actions in front of the big banks, but we kind of feel like they're really huge compared to us. But local government is something where people can actually get involved and go face-to-face with their representative. Do you want to comment about that?
Well, I think that is a shift in political direction that movement is realizing we need to make. If we are to protect our future, our children's future, and the planet's future, we need to shift our strategy towards winning house by house, block by block, street by street, community by community. And that's how we can turn the tide against these corporations, because we're in D.C., as Obama said on his road to the White House, that change will not come from D.C., it will have to come to D.C. That is literally what we have to do in this country. If we want to bring change to the power hierarchy, Wall Street, and the corporations that are ruling and ruining this country, we need to take it to in our backyards, where we do have power, where they cannot outnumber our numbers, our communities, in our communities, at the front doors of their big polluting facilities and their corporate headquarters.
So is that sort of a characterization of where you see Occupy going in 2012, or do you have any
other? Absolutely. Occupy right now, a lot of the focus is on the financial crisis and defending what we need to defend, our lines of defense around families that are being kicked out onto the street, about already economically marginalized communities that are being forced to go jobless. However, that we'll have to take that fight to all the associated corporations that are polluting the planet and the various other corporations, the venture capital corporations, they're supporting that, propping up this destructive, debt-ridden system. One of the links to incinerators that may be interesting, there's a city called Harrisburg. It's the capital of Pennsylvania. It's the largest city in the U.S. to declare bankruptcy, Section 9 bankruptcy to date. The reason they declared bankruptcy is because they decided to invest in a $300 million upgrade to a $1 billion waste incinerator. Now, I keep coming back to this because it's emblematic of what communities are doing across this country. We are allowing our politicians to take public monies and throw them behind bad corporations and bad investments. So just as these banks took people's monies and Wall Street took people's monies and threw them behind toxic assets, behind speculative investments that amounted to a house of cards that came tumbling down on us, we're also throwing money, our political leaders are throwing money behind polluting corporations that are creating an ecological crisis whose scale of impacts will make our current debt crisis look minuscule. The cost of all the pollution burden, the hospitalization, the disease, and the lack of clean air, clean water, and available natural resources to feed us and sustain us in the future amount to, you know, a multi-trillion dollar cost that we haven't even started to it.
That was Karen Nyus on the streets with Ananda Tan outside the Bank of America in San Francisco during the Wall Street protest January 20th, 2012. Find out more at no-burn.org. That's no-burn.org and actforclimatejustice.org. Now I'm going to make it hard and fun for you. We'll take to the streets of San Francisco with Karen Nyus to hear Green American author Ted Nace. Except in the soggy crowd of a rainy day, you can't hear him. There's no microphone on the courthouse steps, just a crowd microphone, and I think it works, involving the people not as passive listeners, but as participants in the speech. Let me know what you think. Here it is, as it happened. Just before we hear Ted, the first speaker is Abram Enten from Move to Amend.
Our planet. together. This is great work. Worthy work. For a human family recognizing who we are. And what we can do together. We have moved to amend. Are grateful for the opportunity to play our part in this process. Changing the nature of politics in the United States is a crucial element. It's a global challenge to corporate power. This great event today.
It was a skunky rainy day, so Ted Nace began this parable about the people with wet feet and the corporations who can never know that experience.
Can you help me with my speech?
Yes! Yes.
With my speech.
We are here on a rainy day. With warm hearts and wet feet.
With warm hearts and wet feet.
Have more rights
than the 100%. So corporations deserve rights.
But if this were true, then buildings would be people.
Then buildings would be people.
Because buildings have people inside them.
Buses would be people.
Classrooms have people inside them.
Shoes would be people.
Because shoes have people inside them.
Cell blocks would be people.
Because cell blocks have people inside them. No. Corporations have rights because powerful people are inside them.
Corporations have rights because powerful people are inside them.
They were given rights. Not by our Constitution. But by judges.
Who were corporate lawyers.
Lewis Powell.
That was a distant Ted Nace, author and environmentalist, passed on by the crowds in San Francisco at the Occupy Wall Street protest January 20th, 2012. My thanks to Radio EcoShock Bay Area correspondent Karen Nyus for braving the elements and the police to get those on-the-street recordings from the Occupy Wall Street protests west. If you violate copyright, you go to jail. If you violate people's homeownership, their pension plans, and their economy, no problem. Take $100 million on your way out the door and head for the next scam. Until the people demand so loudly, so often, and with such determination that justice will be done. I'm Alex Smith for Radio EcoShock. Thank you for joining us.
Clear waves lapping at my feet.